And joining me right now, not live and direct, but pre-recorded, but we're live in your hearts and minds. Marissa, thank you so much for being a part of the program. It's a honor and pleasure to speak to you here tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And yes, I'm liking the bookshelf back there. I'm seeing all the books. I'm seeing the dog back there. I'm seeing what looks maybe like a salt lamp of sorts.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep.
Nailed it.
Yeah, you really did. Good eyes.
I know. I'm very observant. Very observant. And I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're smiling. You're having a good time so far. So far. But Marissa, I must warn you. You know, your job is actually on the line while you're doing this interview with me in real time. So if I were you, I would really watch my words, because this interview, basically, this is what I heard from the higher ups, Marissa. You know, your job kind of depends on this interview here.
Oh, is that so?
The pressure is on. I may or may not be lying.
All right, we'll bring it on.
So Marissa, what got you to sort of become the sort of PR, the media representative for PETA? How on earth did you end up there?
Well, I think it really originated from a childhood of always loving animals and doing theater. And so learning how to speak publicly at a young age. So then as I got older, you know, like I said, I always loved animals. I think like many little kids, I said I wanted to be a veterinarian so I could save them. Then I got older, I realized how much work that is, how many science classes that is. Maybe that wasn't the right path for me. And then I really got involved in animal rights. And as I learned more and more about how animals are treated in industries like the dairy industry, for example, I more and more just really couldn't live with myself if I kept contributing to that. So I wanted to do everything I could to help alleviate some suffering. So I went vegan, got involved in animal rights activism and outreach and education. So I started working at PETA, working with other young activists, just like myself, college student activists, and then found out that you could become a spokesperson. And I said, well, hey, I'm not too bad at public speaking since I've been doing theater for so long. Let me give it a shot. So here I am.
Very nice. And what sort of activism have you participated in, just to sort of get a good feel for you here, Marissa?
Yeah, so I started an animal rights group at my university when I was a college student. And we did a lot of events on campus, some small protests, but more educational events with like tables set up, giving out like free vegan hot chocolate or free vegan chicken nuggets and, you know, pamphlets and information, little PETA's guide to going vegan packets. Often we make a lot of cute stickers and other like fun freebie items that students would like that will, you know, they could use in their everyday life that have pro animal messages on them. So I did a lot of that. PETA actually has a campus rep program where we work with students who are actually hired as contractors on their campus to do animal rights outreach events. And so we work with them to see like what kind of events they would like to do, what would make sense for their campus, and then they fulfill that. So we still have that program today, and I was a campus rep in college. So that really helped bolster the things that I wanted to do on campus by, you know, giving me access to guidance and resources and materials. So I've done quite a bit of that. And then when I graduated, they had an opening in that position to help run that campus activism. So I applied for it. And then I mentored other college activists for many years, and pre-COVID would travel around to a lot of universities, meeting these student groups and helping them, you know, do events and protests on their campus.
Oh, very nice. And while you were doing these sort of, well, I wouldn't say demonstrations, but I'm sure you would be out there in like a booth of sorts talking to students. Did you ever get any sort of like pushback from people that, like, I guess you could say, really disliked or despised PETA?
Well, I think for sure, if you know, I think most people love animals and they don't like hearing about them being hurt, right? And certainly no one ever wants to be told that they're doing the wrong thing. So I think by challenging a lot of conventional beliefs or norms by, you know, maybe people think that animals are not abused as badly as they are in industries like the dairy industry or the leather and fur industries, for example. You're definitely going to, you know, anger a few folks and make some people feel defensive. And that's really never the point. It's not ever to just make someone angry. The point is to try to tell people about, you know, how animals are treated in these industries. This information is completely kept as secret as possible by these multi-billion dollar industries. They don't want people to know how animals are treated. So that's why we have so many under and cover investigations inside of, you know, showing how sheep are literally thrown down on the ground and their necks are stepped on just so people can shear their wool, and then their wool can be sold, you know, for sweaters or what have you. And so we have these undercover investigations because people don't know. And of course, these industries don't want people to know because, right, again, I think most people love animals. And so if people really knew that and then they were told that they don't have to support that, you know, they can buy sweaters without wool. They can buy delicious vegan cheeses at their local grocery store. And, you know, we are seeing people already starting to make that switch. So that's definitely the point of all the outreach and demonstrations we do.
Yeah, some people really do hate PETA and really do not align with PETA at all. And I got to be honest with you, Marissa, I'm not a vegan, by the way.
That's okay.
I mean, I have some products that are vegan that I don't mind eating, but for the most part, I'm eating all kinds of meat, Marissa. I got to be honest with you. I don't want to lie here, but I do enjoy the meats. I'm sorry. I have to get that off my chest here and be honest with you, Marissa, because honesty is the best policy. But sure. I love meat, you know, and I can't stop eating it. But I have seen those videos, and anytime I'm eating meat, I'm always thinking about all the poor animals that lost their lives just to keep me sane.
Well, you know, no one stopped eating meat because they didn't like the taste of it. You know, most people didn't go vegan because they didn't like those foods.
And right,
most people who are vegan were not raised vegan or were not born vegan. I know that's certainly the case for me. It's, you know, it's not the case 100% of the time. I've met a few people, but very, very few in terms of people who are vegan. And so, you know, it's really because of people thinking about how animals are treated and then ultimately killed, no matter how they're treated,
right,
before they're slaughtered. But in America, typically over 95% of any meat, dairy, or eggs come from factory farms.
Right.
You know, even if often we see like marketing and packaging that.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Try to have people think otherwise, take advantage of people's good intentions. But, you know, it's typically not the case. But, you know, even if it was, they are all slaughtered at the same slaughterhouse. You know, they're all strung up by their ankles and they have their throat slit, often while they're still fully conscious. Regardless, if it was a open pasture environment, which, like I said, there's probably only like 4% of, you know, meat that is raised that way. But even if it was, they all still reach like this terrible end. And, you know, animals are individuals just right, like us. And of course, they want to live their life free from human harm and to be able to do, you know, the things that make them happy and be with their own families and everything like that. And, you know, in terms of eating meat as well, no one needs, like, just to clarify, like, no one needs to eat meat, dairy, or eggs, because a healthy, balanced, meat-free diet will provide, you know, people with all the protein, complex carbohydrates, and other nutrients that they need. And then benefit, you also don't have to worry about artery clogging cholesterol and saturated fats that are found in meat, dairy, and eggs. And vegans are also at a much, much lower risk of ever becoming obese or having high blood pressure, having heart disease, or certain forms of cancer.
Yeah, as well, cancer, as cancer, right. Absolutely. And Marissa, how long have you been a vegan?
I've been vegan for, I think, going on 11 years
now. Whoa. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Damn, Marissa. 11 years and no meat at all.
No, and I was vegetarian for a while before that. Yeah, I first went vegetarian because, you know, I didn't want animals to die for my food.
Right.
And I thought that that was enough. But then, you know, because of so many undercover investigations, I then learned that animals used for eggs and for dairy are also all ultimately killed. So I was like, well, okay, I guess I got to go vegan then, because that doesn't really make much sense.
I see. And Marissa, you don't miss eating meat at all. Not even a tiny bit.
No, not at all. No, because there are so many delicious options. I mean, I just went to like a local sort of diner fast food place the other night, and I had a big vegan burger and french fries and a soda, you know, like there are so many delicious vegan options now that I really don't miss it at all. And, you know, I think also with a lot of things, it's just all about the seasoning and the spices. A lot of times, like with meat, a lot of times when we crave meat as like humans biologically, we are craving the fat and then the delicious seasonings that are often put on that. So that can be replicated. So you can still get that fat and you can still get those seasonings, you know, in other meals that don't contain animals.
Right. And I had a few fake products myself. And I like to say that fake products, vegan products. Joking, of course.
Yeah. Vegan products.
But I've had some things that were vegan, and they weren't the real thing. And actually, it tasted quite good, actually. It just sort of depends who makes it, really. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of the bottom line. Because if something's good, it's going to be good no matter if it's vegan, if it's not. You understand what I'm saying. Yeah, food's going to be good no matter what. And I love eating food. So that's why I don't discriminate. That's why I'm like, I'll eat all the meat and I'll eat all kinds of things out there. But yeah, I am trying to better myself and not eat so much meat, because as you said, look at all the list of things you said that could happen to you if you're just eating meat all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. The health benefits are enormous. A lot of people actually start to become vegan, maybe for health reasons initially. And then they learn more about how animals are treated in agriculture. And then they're like, okay, well, add that to the reason, you know, the list of why I should continue to be vegan. And also to the environmental reasons. Animal agriculture is certainly a leading cause of deforestation, groundwater pollution, water usage and land usage in general. And of course, you know, methane gases and greenhouse gases in general, and climate change. So a lot of folks are definitely reducing their meat or, you know, skipping it altogether for the environmental benefits.
And Marissa, do you love all animals?
Absolutely.
You really do? You love all animals?
Yeah, absolutely. They all have a right to be here, just like we do.
Oh, Marissa, you don't even know. So you're telling me you like all bugs and insects too?
Well, sure. And, you know,
Marissa, you're about 2 minutes from getting kicked off of here. I'm joking.
Bugs?
Marissa, that's how I know sometimes that God must not be real if he's allowed mosquitoes and spiders. And of course, that's satirical. I'm joking around, of course. But no, I don't like spiders. I don't like mosquitoes. And Marissa, I don't love all animals. You know, I don't love pit bulls.
Really?
I really don't. That's the one breed of dog that I kind of wish was eliminated. I'm not even joking. That I'm being serious. I hate pit bulls.
So it sounds like you've maybe had some bad experiences.
So many. And I've been around people that bred these dogs to fight years back. And my goodness, the things I've seen and how people treat these dogs. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I sort of ended a friendship with a good friend of mine, that he was a dog breeder, but he was also, you know, making the dogs fight. He had them caged up. He really treated his dog poorly. So I thought, man, I can't be friends with this guy. All the entire time I'm thinking about how badly you treat those poor animals.
Oh, that's terrible. I think what you said is key, is how people treat them. With any animal, I think it's important to not demonize any particular breed over another dog breed, because it really is all about how people treat them. And especially if they're breeding them, then maybe they're also breeding them to have certain characteristics that make them more aggressive. So, you know, it's so sad, and it's so heartbreaking, because obviously these dogs didn't choose to be bred in this way. They didn't choose to be born in, you know, someone's house who bred them for fighting. You know,
that's true.
That's absolutely horrendous and disgusting. You know, that people would do that. I think it's always how people treat them. You know, we have a lot of work on PETA's Community Animal Project that goes around to certain rural areas that tend to keep their dogs outside. And, you know, we definitely see a lot of pit bulls among other breeds.
Yeah.
And, you know, these poor dogs often are chained. They're kept outside year round. And so PETA works around the clock and has thousands of cases open at any given time, where we go to these properties and we work to educate people about how they should be treating their dog. We work to get them off a chain. We work to bring them inside. And if we can, we work to get a owner surrender if they will, refuse to treat their dog properly. So it's really heartbreaking work. I'm so glad that PETA does it, though. It's absolutely crucial. I just recently, I met some of our PETA rescue dogs.
Okay.
And they were just so sweet. One was a pit bull mix, and he was the cutest, sweetest thing I've ever seen. He was just going around, like, his tail was wagging. He was kissing everybody. As soon as anyone would start talking in a high pitched voice, he would run over to them all excitedly and just sit down and want to be pet. So, you know, I definitely urge you to reconsider, you know, any specific hatred towards, you know, a breed or type of animal, because it's always the human's fault.
Well, I have to agree, to be honest.
Yeah.
And what exactly are your thoughts, Marissa, on people that breed animals, those breeders out there? It seems like, for whatever reason, no matter what the species is, the people that breed these animals, there's always something a little off about them psychologically. It's mm-hmm. it's like that sort of business kind of attracts, like, the worst of the worst, the dregs of society, in other words.
Well, you know, I guess I would probably have to agree with you that someone who, you know, especially cats and dogs, there is such an overpopulation crisis in America right now, and in many countries in the world. But, you know, we're in America, so really focusing on that in particular, that there are millions of dogs euthanized every year in shelters who just want a home. There's not enough space for them. There's not enough homes. And so we are certainly against anyone breeding animals. We are certainly against anyone buying a dog when you can just go adopt a loving dog who's looking for a home and a shelter. And then especially too with certain breeds, and I don't know if you've heard, but we've had a campaign lately educating people about breathing and haired breeds of dogs, the dogs with the shortened snouts who can't really breathe well, and they kind of always sound like they're snorting around like a pig.
I don't think I'm familiar with that dog breed.
Well, it would include any types of bulldog. It would include
I see. Yeah.
So any dog with a sort of a smushed face look to him or her, that is a breathing impaired breed. And actually they are illegal in certain countries.
Oh, wow.
And in certain parts of countries around the world. Because it is so dangerous and it's considered so cruel to even breed them into existence, because they are brought into this life having breathing problems that often, if they get too worked up or they get too hot or they run around, they can't breathe. And sometimes, you know, they'll sounds like they're snorting. And so often people think it's kind of cute, like they're like a little pig. But it's not the same respiratory process that is going on with a pig, because the animal is a dog. And so it's because they have a shortened airway. So there's some really great like graphics online that compare what the airway and the nasal cavity is in dogs who have snouts and that's how it should be.
Right.
And then dogs who have been selectively bred over the years to have these shortened snouts versus what their respiratory system looks like. And, you know, it can lead to heat stroke. It can lead to them passing out, and it could even lead to like cardiac arrest or of them dying young. So it's really terrible. So that is, you know, it's never great. It's never good at all to support a breeder or to buy your dog when, like I said, we have so many animals just eagerly awaiting to be rescued and adopted from shelters. But it is particularly cruel to buy one of these brachiophilic, or bibs as we call them, dogs.
Right. Yeah, you have that, by the way, that problem with the with pugs, by the way. A lot of them are.
Oh yeah. Yep, they're included in that.
They got
as
that
well.
Issue.
Yeah, there's several other breeds that I'm not listing there as well. I think even boxers have shortened snouts.
Oh, that's right.
Although
yeah.
Not as shortened as some of the other dogs, like pugs and bulldogs, shih tzus. Yeah, so any dog with that shortened snout is included in that.
And by the way, Marissa, one of the other things people have pushed back on with PETA are quote-unquote extreme tactics. What do you make of those folks out there that say, well, PETA, you know, they do these really extreme sort of graphic ads and they're very provocative and controversial?
Yeah, well, I guess my first question would be, what's an example? You know, what are we calling provocative or extreme? But if you're mentioning, you know, for example, something that's graphic in terms of, you know, maybe graphic, that's probably because that's showing what is happening to animals. So if it's a video of an undercover investigation, for example, it is terrible to look at. Like I said, I don't think anyone, well, most people don't like watching that type of thing. It is upsetting. But it is upsetting what's happening to the animals, and
right.
We can't just all pretend like it's not happening. And so sometimes actually seeing that really horrific, upsetting footage is what we need to kind of get someone's attention and to kind of wake people up sometimes from this, you know, from this busy world that we all live in, where we have this cognitive dissonance where we kind of all know that animals are killed for food, but people don't really like to think about it and they don't want to be reminded of it.
Right.
Then they maybe lie to themselves that it's okay or the animals are treated fine or something. But that's what that footage is there for, is to try to get people to make a difference. And you know what? It works. It really does. So many people have gone vegan and started their journey to try to reduce suffering towards animals by seeing footage like that. I know I went vegan because I saw footage of a baby cow who had just been born to their mother being dragged away from their mother in a dairy farm. And the baby's being dragged by his hind legs through a bunch of hay on the ground. And the mother cow is crying and she's trying to chase after her baby, but she's being held back by several men. And that completely broke my heart. And that's standard industry practice in the dairy industry. That happens millions of times every day.
Well, now I'm disturbed, Marissa.
Yeah. So, you know, that footage is, like I said, hard to see.
Yeah.
You know, we're not happy to like make people upset, but if we can make people upset in order to get them to do something, then we're going to keep doing it because it is working.
And, Marissa, one of the reasons why you are here was to talk about another sort of ad, except this time I don't really think it's that controversial. I mean, I've seen it, and I'll play it for the audience right now, if you don't mind just sitting back for just a quick moment here, and we'll play that audio, which is kind of cool because I watched The Sopranos, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a little bit, you know, I was a little bit young when it first appeared, but, you know, later on in life, I caught up with it. And you know what, you know, you these shows come out and you don't really know too much when you're growing up. But then as an adult, you see them and you're like, whoa, it hits a little bit different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. My parents were big Sopranos fans, but they would always make me leave the room. They would watch it. So
they tell you to get out. Yeah.
Bedtime.
That's funny. All right, well, let me press play here. And for those who have not watched it, go ahead and look it up on YouTube. I'm sure you'll find it. Just look up PETA, and you'll pretty much find it.
That's my cheese. Please don't. Okay, please don't take my cheese away. Please. Please don't take my cheese away. Please don't take my cheese away. Please. Can I please have my cheese? Please don't take it. My cheese. And I was gonna make pizza.
For those who obviously can't see that, there is that cow chasing a small calf in the back of a truck there. Pretty dramatic.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's very, very dramatic. And this ad, will it be actually airing during the Super Bowl, though? I had read stories that right now they're kind of like laying back on what some people would consider quote-unquote controversial.
So last I heard is that it would be airing in New Jersey on the weekend of the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But New Jersey.
Yes.
I like that. Yeah. That's going to work.
Right. That makes sense for the Sopranos.
Right. Maybe not for the folks in California. They might have forgot. I don't know. But yeah, for those in the East Coast. And I'm actually in California, in Southern California. In case anyone didn't know that. So, I mean, I would love that. I would appreciate that very much if I saw that. Yeah. And even much more the folks out there in the East Coast who I'm sure they still love and watch The Sopranos almost every day. And they say things like, oh, you know, things of that nature still, which is always fun. Yeah. I mean, I still say that every now and then.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a good one. It's a good one. And how do you feel about this commercial? Or this ad?
Well, I'm so excited that Edie Falco is in it. I mean, what an icon. And, you know, it's really interesting. We have an interview with her on PETA's Instagram.
Nice.
Where she talks about, you know, kind of what went into making this ad and why she felt so passionate about doing it and wanting to be involved. And she said because it spoke to her as a mother who wants to protect her own children, just like mother cows do. You know, and she talks about that a lot of people don't know, like all mammals, cows only produce milk when they give birth to babies, when they have babies to feed, you know, just like humans. So some people just think that cows produce milk all the time and they're just ready to be milked at any moment for, you know, humans or something. But that's not the case at all. You know, they are forcibly impregnated. They carry their babies for about as long as humans do, 9 months, and then they give birth and they have their calves taken away from them, often within hours of giving birth. So that way their milk can then be, you know, their udders are hooked up to machines and their milk can be bottled and sold to sell for human consumption. You know, meanwhile, their calves are either, maybe if it's a female calf, they are kept in this dairy farm, so then they can have the same fate as their mother. But of course, they're still separated for a while because the mother is never allowed to feed her own baby in these dairy farms. Or the baby is sent to be raised and then slaughtered for beef, or the baby is sent to veal, which is also particularly cruel, where, you know, baby cows are kept in small crates for a period of time where they're not allowed to really gain any muscle. They can't move around. They just want their mothers and they just want to milk from their mothers, but they're kept in these crates and then they're slaughtered at just a few months old.
Aren't you glad you don't work on a farm?
Yeah.
Well, would that be your personal hell in your mind?
Well, You know, it's interesting. We do definitely hear from a lot of people who work on farms, and those are often the ones giving us undercover investigation footage, because they see what's happening, and you know, they need to speak up about it. So, you know, they're truly heroic in that sense. And it's really amazing. And there's also so many farmers or people who've worked in farms who have transitioned their career or their industry to no longer contributing to it. So maybe they start an animal sanctuary, or they start growing mushrooms, for example. And so they're still profiting, they still have this career, but no animals are being harmed. So, you know, for some folks, sometimes, you know, they were born into working on a farm, or, you know, often in the case of slaughterhouses, for example, many people don't want to work at slaughterhouses, and it's maybe the only job they can get to put food on their table. So, you know, we never want to demonize any of those people in particular, and it's more about the industry at large and how all of us, we can vote with our dollars, and we can choose to not support these industries that are incredibly cruel to animals and often cruel to their own employees, human employees as well. And instead, you know, put your money towards vegan companies that are coming up with, you know, these delicious vegan alternatives, or to just, you know, good old fruits and vegetables and mushrooms.
Marissa, what if I told you that I was a big game hunter and I just loved hunting all the time? Would you be angry at me?
So, like a trophy hunter?
Yeah. Would you think I
Well,
was like a, the scum of the earth?
are you a big game hunter?
No.
Okay.
I will say one thing though. I knew a guy, not a big game hunter, but I knew he's like kind of like a deer hunter. Not he wasn't doing all the time, but you know, he would come back and he would kill whatever he would eat whatever he killed though. And one time he actually invited me over for dinner and he didn't tell me exactly what we're gonna have. And it ended up being like deer heart. And I ate it. And it wasn't that bad, but it was definitely something a little bit different, I gotta be honest. Not exactly what I preferred, to be quite truthful to you and to the audience out there. But it's a little funky, not gonna lie to you. But some people love that deer meat though. Not my cup of tea though.
No. Well, you know, whether we're talking about a deer who was killed in the woods for someone to eat, or we're talking about a cow being killed in a slaughterhouse for someone to eat, you know, they're both animals who wanted to live. And eating meat is completely unnecessary for humans. That is a choice that people are making that is not necessary. It's not crucial. So, you know, either way, I kind of feel the same about it. You know, personally, you know, of course, I've met people who have hunted before, and I've talked to people who have hunted before. I, you know, think it's a waste of my time and energy to just get angry at them. But, you know, personally, I am a little off put if someone is okay with killing an animal with their own hands. I'd be a little concerned. You know, we see people, a history of people who are often cruel to animals, especially at a young age, go on to kill humans and become serial killers. So personally, I'm a little off put, of course, and but at the end of the day, whether someone's paying an industry to kill an animal for them, or they're killing an animal for themselves, an animal is being killed either way. And so both situations are not at all ideal, because
Not
we know
very
that,
good, yeah.
yeah, that animals are individuals, they want to live their lives, and that it's unnecessary, for the most part. For most people, you know, we're talking people who have access to a grocery store and who
Right.
have, you know, some basic income to go buy groceries. You know, so we're talking about people who have that choice. You know, most people in America and our society do have that choice, you know, to go buy something else at the grocery store. So in those situations, you know, certainly hunting is unnecessary.
Absolutely. Well, I will definitely try to eat less meat. I mean, I've been promising that, and I have, though. I've been good on my word. I've been letting go of eating as much meat as I have.
What are some of your favorite vegan products that you've had? Like the vegan meats, or have you had any vegan cheeses?
I've had a lot of vegan cheeses, though, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? What are some of your favorites?
Some of my favorites? Well, you know, there's a lot of, let's see, what exactly have been my favorite vegan cheeses? I've had a vegan cheesecake, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't know if that counts, but I mean.
Oh, 100% it does. Yeah, I mean, because a non-vegan cheesecake would have cheese and dairy, right. You know, all coming from the farm that we're talking about. So, yeah, that's great. I've had a few different ones. You know, I think with any of the vegan cheeses or vegan cheesecakes, even the, you know, non-dairy milk options, there's so many different types out there. You know, that's the thing with, you know, most time with milk, you know, we're just talking cow's milk for the most part. But with vegan milks, you go to the store and you see almond milk, soy milk, oat milk now is so popular. You can even get like really fancy and get like macadamia nut milk.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You can get cashew milk, rice milk. I mean, the list really goes on and on. So
by the way, vegan shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
Delicious.
Yes.
I love seafood, by the way. And I accidentally grabbed a vegan shrimp one day and I didn't even know. And I looked at the bag and I'm like, oh my God, this isn't even real and it's this good.
Oh my gosh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. I've had it at a few like restaurants or functions before and it's been really good. I definitely used to love you know, seafood. So yeah, now there's vegan shrimp, there's vegan Gardein fishless fillets, and they also make Gardein makes a crab cake that's super delicious. And I've also made at home, they are made out of trumpet mushrooms, but they resemble scallops and they taste like scallops. They've got the chewiness. Again, it's really, I think, a lot about the texture,
right,
and the fat and the seasoning. So yeah, it tastes like scallops to me.
Nice. We love mushrooms here, both normal and abnormal kind of mushrooms, by the way. We love that here.
Nice.
Absolutely. We don't discriminate against the mushroom species at all, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many great ones out there. I recently saw a recipe for that looked amazing. I think it was, like trumpet mushrooms, and they shredded them. So they were almost like a pulled pork.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, I bet that tastes amazing. Actually, that reminds me of like jackfruit. Have you had jackfruit?
I've had, yes.
Yeah. What do you think? I think it's
not bad. I mean, yeah, you sort of have, well, I was going to say it's not an acquired taste, but yeah, well, I mean, it might be for some folks, depending on your palate of your taste palate, rather.
I feel like with jackfruit, it's more of a texture, like, you know, same with like tofu and some mushroom. Well, some mushrooms are very flavorful, but some of this stuff is really just not that flavorful. Like, you know, I would argue most meat is not actually flavorful either. It's just the seasonings that we put on it. So with jackfruit, I think the texture has actually, when I first started eating it, I hadn't eaten meat in a long time. And I couldn't eat jackfruit because it reminded me too much of pork.
Oh, like,
I didn't believe it. I'm like, are you sure this is vegan? You know, kind of freaked me out. But I eat it all the time now.
And nice.
You know, I don't think it has much of a flavor because I can put different sauces on it and do different types of cuisines. And, it, you know, it kind of just fills that in whatever sauce I put on it.
And Marissa, do you even recall, do you have any like recollection of the last meat related food you've eaten?
You know what? The other day, a couple weeks ago, I ordered a sandwich from a restaurant that was doing a new vegan special, and it was like a bagel sandwich, and it was supposed to be kind of like a lox, but it was carrot that had been like pickled or something to resemble like the flavor of lox, like with caper juice, you know? And I took a bite out of it and I immediately spat it back out because they did not give me the vegan version. They gave me actual salmon lox. And I had to wash my mouth out.
Really? It got to you that much?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Just thinking that it's a dead body, you know? And so I just think of all the, besides the horrors of, what that animal went through for right. their last moments of their life, the bacteria and the parasites. Mm. And, with fish as well, you don't know. With fish, there's really no, with any animals, there's no good way to choose, the type of meat. But with fish, I think some people think, okay, farm-raised is better. But if you've seen any documentaries that show how these aqua farms are, they're horrific. And then they think, okay, well, wild-caught is better. But then, again, the fish... went through the same horrors, if not more. And then you hear about mercury and you hear about microplastics. So all of that running through my head when I took a bite and I was like, that is not carrot.
And you knew right away it was real.
Yeah. I thought it looked a little like I've had carrot locks before. And I feel like it's usually a brighter orange. Than salmon, because most salmon, I don't know if you know, especially if it's from a farm, it's dyed to look orange.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it wasn't as orange as I thought. And I was like, that's kind of weird. But, I didn't really inspect it. And I could just tell by the texture. I mean, especially with that, because, carrot lox, I think, is delicious. Like, I love, pickles and capers and that kind of, saltiness. But it's not like the texture of carrot, it doesn't really compare to, salmon, for example. Whereas actually with, some of these vegan burgers, I think it would be a lot harder. There's been many times I've had a vegan burger somewhere and I have to ask repeatedly if it's vegan, because the texture to me just, it would have me convinced. And I've definitely had, non-vegan friends say the same thing and not really even know. At first when they take a bite, and then I tell them.
Understood.
Like, whoa.
And by the way, I assume both of your parents are still alive and kicking.
They are.
And how do they feel about you, going down this road here? Because I'm just assuming here that they're not vegans.
Actually, they are. Oh my God, they are. Now.
You turned them.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Marissa, you corrupted them. Jokes, of course, but you got them to go full vegan.
Yeah, so my mom is definitely the reason why I went vegetarian. Her and I went vegetarian together when I was younger. She always loved animals as well, and so she had started learning more about how animals are treated and learning more about their complex inner emotional lives and, reading some books about it. So she started to want to go vegetarian, and we were always really close. So she, told me, one day we were driving on a road trip, and we passed a field of cows, and I thought they were so cute, and was going on and on about it. And, we always had lots of adopted cats and dogs when I was growing up, always finding animals who needed homes, and, we'd bring them in. And I was like, oh, they're so cute. And then my mom just kind of gently told me the truth of, that when you get a burger, when we go to McDonald's and a Happy Meal, that's where it comes from, is those cows.
Yeah, they're not very happy.
No, not happy at all.
Yeah, it's not a happy meal for them.
Exactly. And I'm so grateful that she told me that at such a young age. I was 6 or 7 at the time. Because She obviously gave me the choice. I think for a while, so my dad was still eating meat, and if he'd had a steak, and he'd be like, "Oh, you want a few bites?" And so sometimes I'd still have a few bites, but then kind of just over time, I was like, "Oh, well, if those animals are just like my cats and dogs at home who I love,"
right?
I was like, "Oh no!" So I became a vegetarian. Like I said, it was a very, at that time, and where we were living, it was a little hard. So I think, we stopped eating most meat, and then might have some chicken or fish still for a while occasionally. And then, of course, then we learned, chickens and fish are just as emotional as cows and pigs. And, they are, just because they're a different species doesn't mean that they deserve to be killed and the other one doesn't. So then we kind of went full vegetarian when I was a little bit older. So I think that definitely plays a big role. And like I said, when I went vegan for the reason of not wanting animals to be killed for my food, my mom was immediately on board. She was like, okay. So then she went vegan around that time as well. And my dad was still in the Marine Corps at the time. So it was, I think, a little harder for him to make that transition, being, right, you know, in that environment at work. But he eventually did, because I just remember years ago, he saw a video of cows being like released from a large, like a barn, like a bunch of cows were, like, confined in some barn.
Yeah.
And they got released out into this field and they were running around and they were playing with balls and toys and like chasing each other. And they were just like frolicking. It was such a heartwarming video. And I remember my dad started crying from that video.
Oh, wow.
And so he no longer wanted to eat any animals. And he's also always been very health conscious, you know, the Marine Corps, they're always in great shape.
Right.
And so he was always very health conscious as well. So that was another big motivator for him to go vegan. And so, yeah, so both my parents are vegan. So we have, you know, vegan Thanksgivings and vegan Christmas and Easter and, you know, all the family traditions. And we have,
and that doesn't alienate the other side of the family.
Well, I'm an only child. And, you know, growing up as a military, my dad was in the Marine Corps.
Oh, so he moved around.
We moved around. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So we don't always get with,
family
because they're a little further away. So, yeah, but certainly, you know, we bring people in and have non-vegans over for some holiday meals. And, I always am sure to make a really good vegan cheese board when I have non-vegans over, and it's always a crowd pleaser.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, I'm glad that you can still remain on good terms with people that are non-vegan in your personal life.
Yeah, certainly. You know, like
there's some people that there's some folks out there that can be. They're very, you know, if you're not on board here, then we are done.
Well, you know, it can be difficult, I think, for any of us humans to be around people who don't have the same beliefs as us.
And, right.
You know, certainly when you go vegan, and, you know, I don't mean to say it like as if it's an overnight thing.
Right, right.
Not.
Yeah.
But I guess the better phrase is really like once you start to open your eyes to what's happening to animals on this mass scale in our food system, and our, you know, our clothing industry and animal testing and animals used for entertainment, you know, really the list goes on and on. But once you start to open your eyes to it, it is really horrifying, and it is really upsetting and confusing. I think that it's all happening around you. Like, it's kind of surreal. You're like, wait, what is happening? And everyone's just okay with it. And we're just all participating in this. You know, this doesn't seem to align with, you know, the people I know, their values, but yet here they are, you know, supporting these industries and acting in this manner, not really aligning their lifestyle with their values. So, you know, I do have sympathy for that. I think that's probably what a lot of people are going through. But ultimately, you know, being vegan is just about doing as little harm as you can,
right,
to animals and to the planet and to other people.
Right.
So, that's really what it's about. It's not, you know, like a cool person club or anything. Like, so
sure.
I love to have people over and show them vegan food. Of course, you know, I hope that I'll inspire them. I know I've been told that I have inspired a lot of my friends over the years to go vegan.
That's good.
Or try to. So, yeah, so that's, you know, that's a great opportunity for me.
Sure. One of the things I was kind of referring to in the back of my mind, I should have been a little bit more blunt with it, was the fact that in some relationships, it's caused a problem, and even some friendships or marriages and divorce, because the partner goes vegan and the other partner stays eating meat, and they, one thing leads to another. There's been a lot of stories like that in the media for a long time. So this can definitely cause a rift. And that's sort of along the lines as what I was trying to refer to here. And luckily, I don't know if that's ever been a problem for you if maybe you had like a boyfriend or something and you know, you're a vegan and he's not, and you two clash every now and then that probably ends the relationship. I mean, these sort of things do happen. And I know we're just talking about food and people are thinking, well, you know, food doesn't, it's not really a problem, but actually it can be a problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say ever since I've been vegan, every person I've dated has gone vegan since when we started dating. And that was always their choice. That was never an ultimatum or even an ask. But I think it was just the fact that they were around me and then I was vegan. And
Marissa, you forced them. How dare you?
No, never.
You forced them. You got to them.
Way to start off a relationship.
Busted, Marissa.
But I think it just, you know, if you show someone why and you show them how to make that change, and, you know, usually if you're dating someone, you're with them quite a bit and you can help cook and you can show them how to cook and show them what to buy. And, you know, maybe they watch a documentary here or there with you about the food industry and how animals are treated. And it just honestly was a really organic process in all those instances, which was definitely really fortunate. I know that doesn't happen with everyone. I think with someone being vegan, you know, it clearly is a decision that someone is making because they care a lot about whether it's animals or the environment, or their health. But especially if you're doing it for the environment or for animals, I think it would be hard to be seriously involved with someone who wasn't. Like, I think it would be very difficult for you to live with that person, because when you live together, you cook together, buy together, and I think that would be extremely challenging. But, you know, I could say the same about a lot of other beliefs or lifestyles. You know, if you're too different from your partner, that is going to bring some challenges.
But you're willing to compromise.
I think with
maybe a little bit.
Well, certainly certainly if I met someone, you know, like, and they weren't vegan, like I said, like in all my previous relationships, actually, none of them were vegan when we met, but they did all go vegan pretty quickly after we met. I'm engaged and in a very long-term serious relationship now with someone who's been vegan since we started dating. I don't think I could be in a serious relationship with someone who wasn't vegan.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not. Because I would say, hey, you know, this is important to me and this is why I do this. You know, I would show them some videos and some documentaries, and if it wasn't as important of enough of an issue for them,
yeah,
I don't think, you know, I could really like share my life with someone
right.
who didn't have those same values as me.
Understood. But yeah.
That being said, I have many, many very close friends who are not vegan, but I definitely think a friend versus, you know, someone you're going to share your life
with. Yeah. That's pretty major. Definitely.
Yeah,
that's pretty major. But can you imagine, Marissa, this conversation flipped around and it was like a Christian and my boyfriend or girlfriend's a Muslim or Jewish. And I mean, now that would be a big problem for some folks. I mean, but, you know,
people do say
you
that.
Can work it out. Yeah, you can work it out somehow.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, if something is really important to them, whether it's their religion or maybe their politics, or maybe it's, you know, really important to them that they go to the gym every day for 2 hours.
It's how much you love that it's the important factor of how much you love that person, I guess you can say, and how much you're willing to compromise to keep things going.
Right. Well, how much you're willing to compromise, but, you know, also just kind of what you have in common, you know. Yeah. I think it's important to have a lot of your core values, you know, lined up with someone. And you know, if you spent a lot of time with, you know, someone who worked in the animal rights field, and, you know, this was their passion, like myself, and this is my passion, and I, you know, want to educate people about how animals are treated. And, you know, because again, I just don't think most people want this. Like, I really don't think most people know about it. I don't think they truly want this. Yeah. So I think really education and options are the key. And so if I just lived with someone day in and day out and they weren't responding to any of that, you know, I think there would be, it's a much bigger problem of, oh, what are we having for dinner tonight?
Right. I agree 100%. And Marissa, are you religious at all?
Personally, no.
So would you identify as, let's say, like an atheist then?
Maybe more like agnostic.
Or an agnostic. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm open-minded.
Yeah.
Not exactly religious, but I'm kind of along the same boat as you are.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like I'd like to believe that there's a God, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to believe in a lot of things, you know. I'd like to believe that I have the Jeffrey Epstein money and I own a million islands, you know. I mean, that'd be a nice fantasy to own an island. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't want those sort of financial freedom?
Yeah.
But of course, definitely. We don't want to. Yeah, but let me just say this. No, we're not saying that we want to become Jeffrey Epstein or want to be like him.
No, I would take that island and, you know, make it a cow sanctuary.
Right, yeah.
All the cows in the world that I could. And,
you know, that reminded me.
Island.
Marissa, that reminded me of that Cat Island in Japan.
Oh,
have you seen that?
I vaguely heard about it. I thought you were going to say about the like pigs in the Bahamas somewhere.
I've seen that. Yeah, the pigs. There are pigs out there in the Bahamas. A lot of tourists love that. But you know, I love cats. I got to be honest. So the whole Cat Island thing, that's a bit more right up my alley. That's kind of cool.
So are they? What's the deal with the Cat Island? Or did someone bring them there? Are they just living outside?
Yeah, they're just all over. Yeah, they're just all over in Japan. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce some of these names, even though I am biologically half Japanese.
Oh, cool.
So I'm not really an outsider, but I don't know anything about Japanese culture, though. But yeah, there's dozens of what's called or what are referred to as cat islands around Japan. And they were left there, basically. And some people bring them over, but the cats outnumber humans out there 6-1.
Oh, my.
So isn't that insane? You hear, you know, if you ever walk out there, you're going to hear cats crying and calling for you. That's got to be in a way that's kind of fun. But then if you think about it, if you ever actually had to sleep there. My God, I don't know about you, but the cat I own here, you know, they're crying at like 4 a.m. to be let out, and that gets annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I wonder if all of the local bird population has just been completely
wiped, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, with having cats outdoors,
it's, oh, yeah.
You know, really dangerous for the cat and really bad for the ecosystem.
That's true. And Marissa, my goodness, we have just sort of flown on by here. It's been already like an hour.
Wow, time flies.
It really does. I was having such a great time talking about cats and food, all the wonderful things about being alive.
Yeah, cats and food.
Yeah, we talked about everything here. We kind of went full circle, which I appreciate here on the program when we could talk about this and that and the other and bring it full circle here. And that's basically what life's all about. Marissa, and I'm glad you're doing something that you care about and means something to you. And I guess we're pretty much done here, Marissa. I had a great time, and I wish you the very best in your future endeavors and with PETA. And one last thing, though. What exactly do you want out of being, you know, a part of PETA? Do you want to, like, branch off anywhere else? Do you want to just stay with the company? Am I going to have to, like, you know, talk to the one of the founders again and maybe, like, you know, get you in a higher position? What am I going to have to do, Marissa?
Put in a good word.
Let me know. Yeah, I'll put in a good word for you.
You know, I've been at PETA for 8.5 years. And like I mentioned, right when I graduated. And it's been a great ride. It's been a wild ride. I moved to L.A., to work in the LA office after I graduated college on the East Coast. And then now I'm back on the East Coast, working remotely closer to my family. And I've had, you know, a few different roles at PETA. Right now, I do social media management as well as spokesperson. So I'm really enjoying that. You know, it's like I said, just to be able to have opportunities to talk to people like you, you know, with platforms, with audiences, to talk about these really crucial issues. You know, like I mentioned, that millions of animals are killed every day for food in the United States. And that's not even touching on some of these other issues of animals, you know, being used for animal testing or animals used for entertainment. You know, right now we have an action alert for an elephant who was stolen from the wild and who is in a circus in the Midwest for her whole life. In a really upsetting, you know, instance. So just having opportunities like this to talk to people about how every animal is an individual and how we all have that power to make positive change in our life, to better align our lifestyle with our values. And especially in terms of food, you know, you can have that opportunity for change and growth at least 3 times a day that you sit down for a meal. You know, maybe if you have more than 3 meals a day, then you can have that opportunity more throughout the day. So I think it's a really positive, encouraging thing that I'm just really happy to, you know, continue doing that. So yeah, very, very happy to see where this continues to take me.
Very
as long
nice.
As long as I'm fighting for the animals, I'm happy.
Very cool, Marissa. Well, once again, thank you so much for being a part of the program. I will see you on the other side.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me. I really appreciate the time. It's great chatting with you.